السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله. أما بعد، فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، الرحمن الرحيم، مالك يوم الدين، إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين، اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
In the one and only God, to worship Him, to establish His unity, to strive in order to achieve all this, as well as to discharge the rights due to His creation. Furthermore, its purpose was to form one nation and live with each other as brothers. Today, however, despite this claim of reciting the Kalima, i.e. the Islamic Declaration of Faith, and professing belief in there is none worthy of worship except Allah and Muhammad is His Messenger, we are divided and there is no unity among us. Our deeds are not a reflection of the teaching we claim to follow. As a result, if we observe the current state of the Muslim world, it is extremely concerning. Despite some Muslim countries having natural resources and wealth, they neither hold any special status in the eyes of the world powers, nor do they play any particular role in promoting the religion of Islam. Nor do we see an adequate effort to follow the teachings of Islam. The outcome of this is clearly visible. As I have stated many times in the past, non-Muslims take advantage of these circumstances. Therefore, instead of trying to achieve their vested interests only, Muslim governments, politicians, and monarchies should try their level best to unite as one Muslim Ummah. Only if they do this will we be able to safeguard ourselves from the onslaughts of the world. Only then will we be able to uphold our honor, and only then will we be able to stop anti-Islamic powers from dividing us. We must also deliberate over what that system is which Allah the Almighty has created in this era in order for us to achieve this purpose. What is that divine system which we can implement or adopt to safeguard ourselves from these things and instead become united as one nation? That system established by Allah the Almighty was sending the promised Messiah Alayhislam to create one community. Thus, we must ponder over this. It is only when we are mindful of this, when the countries in the Muslim world and Muslims themselves ponder over this, will we be able to safeguard against the discord and conflict that is raised against us. Nevertheless, as an Ahmadi, it is our effort and prayer that may Allah the Almighty unite the Muslim Ummah as one. And may He protect them from this mischief and these injustices which they are currently facing. I have been speaking about the state of the world for a long time. Previously, it was believed that perhaps only Europe and other Western countries would be a cause of this, and they most certainly are. However, even the Muslim countries are contributing towards this. In order to achieve this, these Western powers have first caused disorder in the Muslim countries and have then slowly fueled this disorder even further. And spread it to other countries. The motives behind this are absolutely clear. They want to seize the resources of these countries through their power and bring them under their own use and control. Despite some Arab nations possessing wealth, as I have mentioned already, these Western powers have kept them under their control and authority. In any case, the matters that I had been speaking about for a long time, before externals as well as before our own people, today we are seeing their results clearly before us. We should always remember that the forces of the Dajjal, i.e. the Antichrist, never wish to see us Muslims living in peace. Their very agenda is to create perpetual discord in the Muslim world. The forces of the Antichrist have always deceived everyone, claiming that they were in fact forming agreements with Arab countries, which have vast amounts of oil and other resources, for the sake of establishing peace. Whereas, in reality, their actual plans were completely different, which have now become abundantly clear. Thus, especially during these days, it is our duty to bow before Allah the Almighty in prayer, praying especially for the Muslim world, as there is a great need for this at this time. If we review the current war that is taking place in the Middle East, there is something that becomes evidently clear. The United States has established many military bases in various Muslim countries. But for what purpose? What is the reason? Was it for the protection of those countries? From whom were these Arab countries actually under threat? In fact, these powers themselves created the threats and then established the narrative that you are in danger and therefore it is necessary to set up these bases for your protection. Yet, they would never use their bases or weapons against the forces from which Muslims may actually face danger. Rather, Muslims were persuaded to provide these bases on the insurance that their interests and trade would benefit. In reality, however, their main objective was to establish a strong presence in this region in opposition to their own rivals. Even if the Arab countries did face any threat, it was largely one created by these very powers themselves. Otherwise, there was no such inherent danger among the Muslim countries themselves. In any case, these bases were established so that their dominance in the region could be maintained. They sought to maintain superiority not only over the non-Islamic world, but also over the Islamic world. Iran has always been a source of concern for them. And due to the differences in beliefs, some Muslim countries were also opposed to Iran. These powers then exploited that situation. Since Iran had adopted a much stricter policy against Israel, they deemed it appropriate to somehow win over the Arab countries and establish bases there so that Israel's protection could be ensured and Iran could be intimidated through their continued presence. The reality has become quite apparent, and we have already witnessed the consequences of the fact that as a result of these bases, Arab countries also became a potential target, which eventually transpired, and their economies were also damaged. Countries possessing oil wealth or tourism have been negatively impacted. This situation has also benefited those same powers and will continue to benefit them in the future. When war occurs and economies are affected, the opposing side naturally responds by attacking and attempting to destroy the bases of others. Since there was conflict with Iran, Iran also did what we are witnessing today. It targeted and struck American bases located in Arab countries, either destroying them or causing damage to them. Just yesterday, an Arab journalist wrote that the Arabs should remain cautious. According to him, the attacks that are said to be carried out by Iran may not necessarily be by Iran alone. The United States and Israel themselves could also carry them out. Even if Iran conducted some attacks earlier, these powers might now exploit the situation and carry out attacks themselves. Iran has also denied responsibility for some of the attacks. He even wrote that it is possible that at some stage, the United States and Israel may withdraw from this war, leaving the Muslim world to continue fighting among themselves, which is precisely what they desire. During the Iraq War, Hazrat Khalifatul Masih IV, rahimahullah, had also issued this warning that now this disorder would continue spreading in the world. If only the Muslim world would understand this matter. Now examine how, alongside the Iraq War, attempts were made to spread disorder in the Muslim countries as well. Discord was spread within them. And since that time, continuous unrest has also been arising in other Muslim countries, which no one can deny. Some Muslim countries are even fighting against one another, as we see in the Muslim world. As I have said, this unrest has been spread by these same Western powers, and there seems to be no end in sight, unless there is a special decree of Allah the Almighty, and even for that, they will nonetheless have to make efforts. In any case, we should also pray for Allah the Almighty to save and protect the Muslim world from this unrest and disorder, and the Muslim world and the Muslims to strive for peace and live with one another as brothers. This is their Islamic teaching. It should not be that they become those who cut one another's throats. Therefore, this is our responsibility, and for a long time, we have been constantly reminding our own people as well as others to stop from their injustices. The way in which the injustices and oppression are increasing day by day indicates that a world war will occur on a vast scale. Rather, according to some Western commentators, the global war has already begun. I also say that it has begun. But even now, if the Muslim world uses wisdom, comes to their senses, becomes united, and work together, then even now it can remain safe from the schemes of the Dajjal. If one assesses the condition of the world, then at present the world is in grave danger. As I have said before, everyone has their own vested interests. And when extreme selfishness is born, then a person thinks of nothing else. He thinks only of himself. Therefore, we must consider that if we wish to reduce the disorder in the world, it will not be reduced merely by taking one's own rights. Rather, one has to give up certain rights as well. If the Muslim world understands this matter and tells their supporters among the Western and big powers that for the establishment of peace, they will also have to leave some of their rights, let alone leave any rights, they themselves are the ones who are usurping the rights of others. We will have to tell them that you must also act with justice. Only then can we establish peace in the world. As I have already mentioned for some time now, I have been drawing people's attention towards this matter. The very people who at the time used to say, after hearing my words, that you are very pessimistic and that you hold a negative concept by stating that the world would enter into a dangerous war, now the very same people themselves have begun to say that the thing which we considered impossible a few years ago has now itself become possible, and wars have begun. Their own analysts, who are based in Europe and America, have now begun writing that the beginning of the world war has taken place, as I said earlier, and it will continue to increase. And as long as these people continue making efforts to obtain their unlawful vested interests, there is no possibility of any decrease in this danger. When war takes place, losses occur on both sides. Now, the war that is taking place in the Middle East, although it is said that this war was started by America attacking Iran, however, Iran had clearly given warnings that if they were attacked, the bases of America that exist in Arab countries, which they had built for a particular purpose, and from which they are now also obtaining that purpose, they will attack them. Iran had clearly stated this. Then, when the war began, Iran was bombed, their cities were destroyed, innocent people, including children, were killed. The residence of their spiritual leader was attacked, and many members of his family were killed. These powers thought and would raise slogans that we will end this regime and then Iranians will receive freedom. But what effect did this have? Those who were previously somewhat opposed have now begun to support them. And their leader, whose name was Khamenei, they have made him into a martyr. And because of this martyrdom status, his honor in his nation has greatly increased. His children were also killed. The whole family was killed. Owing to this act of injustice, let alone a regime change, his honor and respect has increased even more.
इनको इनकी इज्जत और इत्तेहाम और ज्यादा बढ़ गया.
In any case, Iran also reacted by attacking the bases of the Western powers and of America in the Arab countries. Apart from this, there are also certain places, such as oil wells and other similar places, where America began issuing threats that Iran attacked such and such oil fields of Saudi Arabia. As a result, they will do such and such. And in some places, they even said that an attack has been carried out, therefore they will do such and such. Upon this, Iran clearly said that neither have we attacked such places, nor do we have any such intention. This is another scheme to create hatred in the hearts of Muslims against other Muslims. Fighting is already taking place. This is only an attempt to fan the flame of this hatred. I read the statement of a journalist earlier who said that it is possible that they themselves may cause damage and then attribute it to Iran. As I have said, in such circumstances, the Muslim world should take steps with great thought and wisdom. However, we Ahmadis, despite feeling deep pain, are helpless. We cannot do anything except warn them, pray for them, and try to make them understand that what is happening is wrong. If the Muslim governments even now come to their senses, and instead of keeping their own national interests in mind, but keep in view the interests of the Muslim Ummah as a whole, and refrain from committing any form of betrayal, then even now some degree of damage may be prevented. Although some of the Arab countries in the Middle East possess oil wealth, they neither have strong defensive capabilities nor are their industries developing. Progress cannot be achieved merely through oil wealth or in some places by promoting and developing tourism. They are completely dependent on the Western world and Western powers. As I mentioned, taking advantage of this very weakness, Western powers established their military bases there. Then, when the war against Iran began, Iran also started launching attacks on Arab countries. In reality, Iran has not attacked the Arab countries themselves, but has targeted the American bases located there. Yet now, the Arabs are being given the impression that the attacks are against them. As is now plainly clear, this war has now taken on a frightening dimension. Missiles are being launched from Iran, and in order to intercept them, the Americans have installed a defensive system. However, analysts are now writing that if Iran launches a missile costing $50,000, the cost of destroying it using the intercepting missile amounts to several million dollars. Some analysts even claim that economically, this is causing a loss for the United States. However, this is merely an opinion. These powers always keep calculations of everything beforehand and conduct full assessments. They would have already planned all of this. I do not believe that these powers would ever willingly bear such losses themselves. Rather, they would recover this money from those Arab countries by saying that they are defending them. On the one hand, their oil fields are being shut down, inflation is rising, and oil production is decreasing. And on the other hand, they will also have to bear the cost. As a result, their reserves will diminish significantly or may even be exhausted. Ultimately, the economy of the Arab world will suffer greatly. Although the Western world and major powers may also face some losses, the greatest loss will fall upon the Arabs. This is something they should still understand even now. Now we see that the current president of the United States is simply implementing the same policies of the governments in the past. this is not merely the policy of the present administration. Rather, it has always been their policy that wherever they wish, they seize resources by force and then try to justify it afterwards by presenting one excuse or another. In fact, the current Vice President of the United States has even gone so far as to say that if a certain country does not join them, they will forcibly seize its resources and compel them to align with them. Countries that do not participate in wars are subjected to restrictions and sanctions. In recent days, the Prime Minister of Spain showed courage to say that they would not become part of this war and would not provide use of their bases. In response, he was threatened that the United States would cut off trade relations with Spain. Thus, through intimidation and by attempting to cause harm through an unjust means, countries and nations are pressured into joining them. In such a situation, justice no longer exists anywhere. And when justice disappears, destruction follows, and dangerous consequences emerge. The very consequences we are witnessing today. Indeed, even more severe and dreadful outcomes may arise in the future. Recently, in the European Parliament, a female Spanish member of Parliament spoke very openly, stating that in none of America's wars have women ever attained freedom. As a woman, she tackled the issue from the perspective of women and said that the claim of USA that they are fighting for the freedom of Iranian women is entirely false. She said that Iranian women will never attain freedom through this, nor has America ever fought a war for the freedom of women, nor have they ever succeeded in granting them freedom. In any case, the summary of the matter is that although America already possessed a certain degree of monopoly in these countries, Israel is now being openly included as part of it in order to further strengthen this monopoly. The Arab and Islamic countries fail to understand that through coercion, intimidation, unjust methods, and deceptive schemes, they are being trapped in such a situation where they are being drawn into war with one of their fellow Muslim countries. Muslims are being made to fight against Muslims. In any case, Russia and China are now also forming their own bloc, and it is evident that the blocs which are now being formed will continue to grow in the future or will expand further, and more will continue to emerge and become stronger. The Islamic world will continue to remain a battlefield of wars because it possesses such resources over which these powers wish to gain control. If only the Muslims would understand this and act with wisdom. Now they say, that is America and its allies, that they attacked Iran because it had certain intentions, that if it had acted upon them, such and such consequences would have arisen, and that it might have developed an atomic bomb, or that something else might have occurred. In other words, merely by creating a hypothetical scenario, they initiated a war on the basis that if such and such thing happened, then such consequences would have followed. This is entirely an act of aggression. Now even their own Western analysts have begun to say that destroying Iran or waging war against it is not as easy as they had imagined. Iran is a large and expansive country. It possesses some degree of strength, and this war could also continue for a long time. Although its consequences will affect the economy of the entire world, its impact upon the Muslim world will be far greater. Yet, the greatest and most regretful aspect of this all is that in all of this, Muslims themselves are shedding the blood of Muslims. In any case, Muslims should fear the punishment of Allah the Almighty. Hundreds of children have been killed, Hundreds of innocent people have been killed. If one looks towards the Western countries, colonists have begun to write that if an attack occurs in Israel, America, or any Western country, and a few of our children had been killed, then column after column is written in newspapers, and they continue writing about it for many days. Yet, despite bombing a school and hundreds of children being killed, there is no one to speak about it. First, the situation was created in Palestine, and now the same is occurring in Iran. It appears that in their view, the life of a Muslim is of no importance. In any case, may Allah the Almighty grant the Muslims wisdom so that they act with understanding and endeavor to resolve their issues by sitting together with one another. When they claim belief in the oneness of God, then for the establishment of this oneness, they ought to become united. There is no need to create conflicts merely through baseless accusations. And to say that disputes are increasing because of the beliefs of a certain group. At times, disputes may also arise due to differing beliefs, and such matters do occur among Muslims. The mutual discord that exists among Muslims occur for this reason as well. However, the Holy Prophet ﷺ was so cautious and so compassionate that on some occasions the companions said before him that a certain person was a hypocrite. The Holy Prophet ﷺ replied that as long as he professes La ilaha illallah, he cannot say anything against him, and they too should not call him a hypocrite. Thus, to create disputes over trivial matters is in reality something that only harms one's own self. May Allah the Almighty grant the Muslim world the understanding of this as well. Even now, they should see reason and should not turn against Iran merely because of differences in belief. Islam came for the establishment of Tawheed, and therefore, efforts should be made towards this. They should not consider big powers to be their God, because the only power that endures forever is the power of God Almighty. If these major powers are considered to be everything, then they will gradually take control of the entire Islamic world one by one, and these apparent governments will also come to an end. Thus, even now there is time. It is necessary to act wisely and turn towards God Almighty. These worldly people have ruined the peace and tranquility of the world, and especially the peace of the Muslim world, and they will continue to do so in the future as well. While guiding the Muslims, Allah the Almighty states in the Holy Quran, And if two parties of believers fight against each other, make peace between them. Then, if after the peace treaty, if one of them transgresses against the other, fight the party that transgresses until it returns to the command of Allah. Then, if it returns, make peace between them with equity and act justly. Verily, Allah loves the just. Although this is the blueprint and essence which is vital for establishing peace in the world, the Muslim world should especially adhere to it, because Allah the Almighty has given this clear guidance in the Holy Quran. Therefore, the requirements of justice and fairness must be fulfilled, and the governments of Islamic countries should also play its role in this regard. It should also be clear that while bringing about reconciliation, personal interests must not be given precedence. Rather, the actual matter should be judged based on the true underlying causes. The causes, in fact, are those which are plainly visible to us. That is, the forces of Dajjal wish to set us against one another. The institutions that have been established, such as the United Nations, have likewise not played any positive role. Rather, now even some people themselves have begun to speak against them. Therefore, if we rise above personal interests and put aside national interests in dealing with these matters, Only then can we be safeguarded. Otherwise, we will fall into the lap of these powers of the Dajjal. Hence, all Muslim countries need to sit together and deliberate collectively. Similarly, Allah the Almighty further states in this verse, إِنَّمَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ إِخْوَةً فَأَصْلِحُوا بَيْنَ أَخَوَيْكُمْ وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُرْحَمُونَ. All believers are brothers. So make peace between your brothers who fight against one another. And be mindful of your duty to Allah, that you may be shown mercy. Even if differences arise among Muslims, as it is said that there is differences between Iran and certain Arab countries, or in other Muslim nations, they should remember that their fundamental bond with one another is that of Islamic brotherhood. Minor disputes should not become the cause of breaking this bond of Islamic fraternity, and Muslim countries in particular must pay special attention to this matter. Otherwise, as I have said, the forces opposing Islam will take advantage of the situation. Therefore, the Arab countries and likewise the government of Iran should seek a peaceful resolution. China and some other countries, including Pakistan, have offered to play their role in facilitating reconciliation. Only if the Muslim world understands this matter, may Allah the Almighty grant them wisdom. In any case, our duty is to pray, particularly for the Muslim world and for the innocent. During the month of Ramadan especially, one should not focus solely on personal prayers, but should also pray for the Muslim Ummah. May Allah the Almighty grant them wisdom so that peace may be established in the world and particularly in the Muslim world, so that Muslims do not spill the blood of one another. Those who are fighting amongst themselves and unjustly killing one another are incurring the displeasure of Allah the Almighty through such actions. Such people will suffer loss not only in this world, but also in the hereafter. Therefore, it is necessary to pay particular attention to this matter. And for this, we especially need to pray. May Allah the Almighty also grant us the ability to pray in a true and sincere manner. Today, I will also lead some funeral prayers in absentia, and I'll mention some of their details. The first mention is of respected Sahibzadi Amatul Jamil Sahiba, who is the youngest daughter of Hazrat Khalid Namsi II radiallahu anhu, and the wife of the late Nasir Muhammad Sial Sahib. She was the daughter-in-law of Chaudhry Fateh Muhammad Sial Sahib, who also served as missionary here in the UK. She passed away a few days ago. Verily to Allah we belong and to Him shall we return. The deceased was a Musia. She was the youngest daughter of Hazrat Sayyida Maryam Begum Sahiba, Umme Tahir, and also the youngest among the children of Hazrat Muslim Maud. Her nikah was announced in 1955 by Hazrat Muslim Maud radiallahu anhu. At that time, due to illness, Hazrat Muslim Maud delivered the sermon of the nikah while lying on his bed and led the prayers. Only a few members of the household were present. The person relating this account has written that throughout this entire occasion, a special state was apparent upon Hazrat Khalid Masih II, radiallahu anhu. Later, in 1956, Hazrat Muslim Maud himself arranged her wedding and bade her farewell with prayers. She is survived by four children. Her first son, Zahir Mustafa, had been given in childhood to her sister, Sahibzadi Amatul Qayyum Sahiba, who raised him from an early age. One daughter, Yasmin Malik, resides in Canada. Another daughter, Saadi Ahmed, lives here in the UK. Sophia Ahmed resides in Rabwa and is the wife of Mirza Samad Ahmed, who serves as Nazir Khidmat-e-Darveshan. Her husband, Nasir Muhammad Sayal Sahib, was a life devotee. When Hazrat Muslim Maud initiated the Fazlullah Research Project, he appointed him to work in research. Later, when that research project was closed, the Jamaat permitted him to pursue other work. Her daughter, Sophia, writes that she was very considerate towards the poor. Others have also written to me saying that she cared for them and tried to fulfill the needs of those who were in difficulty. During her childhood, there were also certain incidents between her and Hazrat Muslim Aud, and some dreams of Hazrat Muslim Aud in which she is mentioned as well. In this way, with the mention of her life, some aspects of earlier history also come to light. She related an incident from her household which illustrates how deeply Hazrat Muslim Aud was principled and the honor he had for those who served the Jamaat. Hazrat Muslim Aud's shoes used to be left outside and someone would polish them. On one occasion, she also placed her own shoes there. Hazrat Muslim Aud picked up the shoes and brought them inside, asking, "Whose shoes are these?" He was upset and no one answered. Finally, he said, "Very well, tell me whose they are. I will not say anything." Although she was very dear to Hazrat Muslim Aud, she admitted that the shoes belonged to her. Upon this, he said, "In future, if you cannot polish your own shoes, then give them to me, but do not have a worker of the Jamaat polish them." She was extremely charitable and took care of the poor. Her daughter says that when she came across her mother's registers from among her account books, there were many recorded entries showing regular expenditures made to assist the poor. When she was 7 years old, her mother, Hazrat Maryam Sahiba, Umme Tahir Sahiba, passed away. Hazrat Muslim Aud writes, "When we brought her body to Sheikh Bashir Ahmed Sahib's house, my youngest daughter, 7-year-old Amatul Jamil, who is very dear to Maryam and is dear to me, started wailing and crying out, 'Hai Ummi, O mother, O mother.' I approached her and said, 'Jimmy,' as we would affectionately call her, 'your mother has gone to Allah's home. There she will be much more comfortable. It was Allah's will that she should go to him. Look, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam passed away. Your grandfather, i.e. the Prophet Messiah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, passed away. Was your mother greater than them?'" Hazrat Muslim Aud says, "May God's protection never be removed from this girl for even a minute. For as soon as I had said those words, not once did she wail for her mother again. As soon as she heard these words, she fell silent. This was to the extent that the next day, during the funeral procession, when her elder sister screamed out of grief and fell unconscious, my Jimmy approached my youngest wife, Maryam Siddiqa, and said, 'Choti Appa.' The children called Hazrat Maryam Siddiqa Sahiba Choti Appa. 'How foolish is my sister? Father says that it was God's decree for my mother to pass away, but she still cries.' Hazrat Muslim Aud then prayed, 'O my Lord, O my Lord, will you not protect that person in the hereafter from every anguish and pain, whose daughter never displayed anguish at her mother's death, merely for your pleasure?' He then prayed for Hazrat Maryam Umme Tahir Sahiba, saying, 'O my merciful God, it is the right of your servants to have such an expectation of you, and to fulfill this desire is most befitting of you.' She was very regular in offering financial contributions. She had already cleared her account of Hissa Jaidat well in advance. Whenever a neighbor passed away, she would regularly send food to their household. She would often say to those who visited her, indeed, and she told me several times as well, 'Pray that my end may be a good one.' Her granddaughter, Nusrat, says that her grandmother would prepare herself well before the time of prayer and sit waiting anxiously for the appointed time of prayer. She would offer lengthy supplications. In fact, she had prepared a list of people for whom she wished to pray. Nusrat says that when she was a young child, she would sometimes become uneasy upon hearing her long, tearful prayers of her grandmother. Nevertheless, she would continue to pray for all those people. Hadi Ali Sahib has also written, as I mentioned earlier, there are many old memories and incidents associated with her, including some visions of Hazrat Muslim Maud. Hadi Ali Sahib says, she told me that once she was traveling in a car with Hazrat Khalifatul Masih II radiallahu anhu and was seated with him in the back seat. She observed that Hazrat Muslim Maud was repeatedly counting something on his fingers. She asked, "Father, what are you counting?" He replied, "I am estimating the number of missionaries required in all the countries of the world. I will need at least so many hundreds of thousands of missionaries throughout the world. Only then will we be able to make the world aware of the true teachings of Islam." This was the burning passion that Hazrat Muslim Maud possessed, and some of her narrations relate to this. There is another vision seen by Hazrat Muslim Maud which is connected with her, and since it concerns her, I will mention it. The vision occurred in June 1948. Hazrat Muslim Maud stated, "In June, I was in Nasrabad, Sindh. There I saw a minaret, which was very tall and white, resembling the minaret of Qadian. On the balcony of the lower level of the minaret, near the doorway, my daughter Amatul Jameel was seated, quite at ease, with her legs dangling over the edge. Just then, my gaze fell upon the minaret, and I saw that from the doorway of the uppermost story, a very large snake emerged. It was several feet long and about a foot and a half thick and green in color. It had thrust out its head and was moving towards the lower level. In this way, it was descending from the upper level to one below. To summarize briefly, since the account is rather lengthy, it continued moving downward until it reached the level above the lower story and then turned towards the roof of the lower level. As the Muslim says, at that moment, the thought arose in my heart that Amatul Jameel was sitting on the balcony near the doorway, and that perhaps the snake might turn and bite her. At that same time, I feared that if the girl moved suddenly, she might fall and injure herself. Therefore, I began to pray before Allah the Almighty with great earnestness. I remember the following words of the prayer. That, O our Lord, grant her honor and protection for my sake and for the sake of Ahmadiyya Jamaat and for the sake of its poor. As a Muslim writes, in Arabic the word ghuraba means travelers, whereas in Urdu it means the poor and destitute. Allah the Almighty knows best whether in this instance the Urdu usage was intended or the Arabic usage, and whether it may also allude to certain travelers. In any case, he says, as I continued this prayer, I saw that Amatul Jameel herself sensed the danger and began to move away from the doorway along the balcony. Gradually, she moved several yards away from the door. Meanwhile, the snake descended through that doorway and turned towards Jameel. But since he was now some distance away, it did not pursue her and instead began descending towards the ground. As a Muslim writes, the vision appears highly blessed for the child, for it contains a prayer. She will become a source of comfort for me and will also be beneficial for the Jamaat and for the poor. And Allah knows best. There are also some other visions of Hazrat Muslim Maud in which she is mentioned. May Allah the Almighty grant her forgiveness and mercy. The second funeral to be mentioned is that of Dr. Rashid Ahmed Khan Sahib of the Netherlands, son of respected Nizamuddin Sahib. He passed away recently at the age of 91. Verily, to Allah we belong and to Him shall we return. By the grace of Allah, he was a Musi. He is survived by 4 sons and 4 daughters. Dr. Rashid Sahib's father, Nizamuddin Sahib, was the younger brother of Dr. Fatihuddin Sahib, former Emir of the Frontier Province. And it was through him that Ahmadiyyat entered their family. In 1905, the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam delivered a speech in Ludhiana. At that time, Fatihuddin Sahib was still a school student. The teacher strictly warned the students never to go and listen to him, saying, "He is a magician and will cast a spell on you." Such allegations have always been leveled against prophets, and the same charge was made against the Prophet ﷺ by Muslim clerics. Nevertheless, Fatehuddin Sahib went to hear the address, and upon seeing the blessed face of the Prophet ﷺ, even at that young age, he became convinced of his truthfulness. Later, after completing his education, he took the Pledge of Allegiance in 1914, during the time of Hazrat Khalid Masih I, radiallahu anhu. The late Rashid Ahmad Sahib was also of a righteous nature, gentle in disposition, sociable, God-fearing, dutiful towards relatives, willing to bear hardship himself, courageous and fearless, deeply devoted to Khilafat, and ever ready for sacrifice. He would support the poor and assist the needy without informing anyone. When newly converted Ahmadis were falsely charged by opponents, he would go to help with their bail. He also served in the Furqan Force. He had the opportunity, along with his father-in-law Abbas Khan Sahib and his brother Manzoor Sahib, to be sent by Hazrat Khalid Masih II radiallahu anhu to various areas of the frontier province under the Waqf-e Jadid scheme. They were tasked with re-establishing contact with old Ahmadi families and propagating the message of Ahmadiyyat, which they fulfilled with excellence. He had great zeal for preaching. He preached to a friend, Daulat Khan Sahib, who accepted Ahmadiyyat through his preaching efforts. A case was filed against him and he was arrested. No one was coming forward to provide bail. They were not accepting any affidavit, and so Rashid Sahib himself went there with his son-in-law. A crowd of 5,000 clerics gathered and began pelting them with stones. A stone struck his son-in-law's head. He fell, was beaten, and attained martyrdom on the spot. According to the reports, the conduct of these satanic individuals is such that they claim to do such things to attain blessings. The police officers also began kicking the body, claiming they too were earning blessings. Rashid Sahib was also severely beaten. Nearly all the bones in his body were fractured. He sustained many injuries. I later saw the marks myself, including scars on his face, and his arms remained bent due to those injuries. However, Allah the Almighty saved him. The assailants left him for dead. When the police were transporting what they thought was his corpse and reached near the hospital, he said, "I am alive. Take me to such and such place." The doctors were astonished that he was still living. Allah the Almighty had decreed that he should live. For more than 30 years thereafter, he remained alive, active, and engaged in service despite his injuries. He asked the police to take him to Peshawar. The police there were enemies to Ahmadiyyat, and the journey was dangerous. Nevertheless, one benefit of the conditions there is that if you offer the police money, they become cooperative. Rashid Sahib said, "Take whatever amount from me that you desire, but take me to my destination." The police officer then agreed and transported him to Peshawar. Thereafter, he went to Rabwa, where he was treated, and through the grace of Allah the Almighty, he was granted a new life. From being taken to the morgue, Allah the Almighty granting him 30 more active years of life, he later moved to the Netherlands, where he actively served the community. In 1974, enemies again pointed a pistol at him and demanded that he recited the Kalama and become a Muslim. He replied with great courage, I already recite it and believe in it. How can I become a Muslim again? They then demanded that he abuse the Promised Messiah Islam. He said, I will not utter abuse. That is not Islam. I send blessings upon the Holy Prophet and act upon his teaching. I cannot commit such an act. He narrated to them the incident of a companion who, when the news of the Holy Prophet's martyrdom spread at Uhud, said that only a single date lay between him and paradise, cast it aside, and attacked the enemy alone until he was cut to pieces and martyred. Rashid Sahib said to them, between you and I, not even a date stands. There is no space at all, for you have already placed the gun upon my chest. Press the trigger and make me a martyr, but I will not speak ill of the Promised Messiah, alayhi salam. He thus displayed great courage. May Allah the Almighty grant him forgiveness and mercy, elevate his ranks, and enable his children to continue in righteousness. The third funeral is that of respected Zainab Bibi Sahiba, wife of the late Bashir Ahmed Sahib, former president of the community and imam of the mosque in Chuck 275, Kartarpur. She passed away recently at the age of 85. Verily to Allah we belong and to Him shall we return. By the grace of Allah the Almighty, she was a Musia. Her father, Ali Muhammad Sahib, was a caretaker of Masjid Darul Zikr in Faisalabad. She was devoted to prayer, observant of the Hajj, regular in her daily prayers and recitation of the Holy Quran, hospitable, deeply devoted to Khilafat, and of a noble character. She assisted the poor and listened to the Friday sermon regularly, gathering her household to listen with her. She is survived by 3 sons and 4 daughters. Several grandchildren are life devotees. Her son, Tahir Ahmed Sefi Sahib, is a missionary in Lusaka, Zambia. Rather, her daughter, Amadur Rashid Saiba, is the wife of a missionary serving in Lusaka. At the time of her mother's demise, the daughter was in Lusaka and could not attend the funeral. May Allah the Almighty grant her patience and fortitude, and may He bestow forgiveness and mercy upon the deceased.
Alhamdulillah, nahmaduhu wa nasta'inuhu wa nastaghfiruhu wa nu'minu bihi wa natawakkalu alayhi wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa min sayyiati a'malina man yahdihillahu fala mudilla lahu وَمَنْ يُضْلِلْهُ فَلَا هَادِيَ لَهُ وَنَشْهَدُ أَنْ لَا إِلَهَ إِلَّا اللَّهُ وَنَشْهَدُ أَنَّ مُحَمَّدًا عَبْدُهُ وَرَسُولُهُ عِبَادَ اللَّهِ رَحِمَكُمُ اللَّهُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ يَأْمُرُ بِالْعَدْلِ وَالْإِحْسَانِ وَإِيتَاءِ ذِي الْقُرْبَى وينهى عن الفحشاء والمنكر والبغي يعظكم لعلكم تذكرون اذكروا الله يذكركم وَذُوهُ يَسْتَجِبْ لَكُمْ وَلَذِكْرُ اللَّهِ أَكْبَرُ